Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
And it looks like we've got a quorum, so we will call the meeting to order. And I do want to thank the vice chair for taking over for the meeting last at our first meeting. And we will proceed today. We're going to have a review or overview of the Metropolitan Council. And if you introduce yourself and proceed.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair members. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. And we appreciate the opportunity to come and to give a brief overview of the council and our roles and responsibilities. I know that there are other committees that have jurisdiction over some of the roles and funding that the council receives through the state, but for the sake of the committee and giving an overview, I'm going to give you the whole shebang here, but I'll try to move through it pretty quickly. So with that, I'll get started. And first slide is asked who we are, and the council was created by the legislature to plan for growth in the prosperity of the Twin Cities area that occurred in 1967. Since that time, there have been additional authorities provided to the council. But in more broad strokes, we established regional growth policies and long-range plans for transportation, aviation, water resources, regional parks, housing and water supply issues in the South County metro area. We also provide award-winning services in transit, wastewater collection, and treatment, and also in affordable housing. Sorry. Let's do the end of the slide. This one. Okay.
Thank you very much. So along the same lines of who are we, our jurisdiction is the Seven County metropolitan area. We are governed by a regional board with a regional perspective. And so we have, we cover Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, and Scott. We've got a board made up of 17 members. 16 of them serve districts. The chair serves at large. And the council members are appointed by the governor, and the Senate confirms them. And so, hi, Representative Hertas. Nice to see you. No, we're good. And so this is a pretty relevant slide right here about appointing the council members. We are in the process right now of seating the new council. Our council members serve at the pleasure of the governor and are appointed by the governor. So Governor Walz is now tasked with seating the naming a chair, which he's done with a former legislator and former mayor Nora Slawick. And now we're seating the 16 members of the Metropolitan Council. And so what the governor does is that he convenes a nominating committee made up of local government and community partners, and then we conduct interviews. We're in the process of doing that. We've had one of our four where we interview folks from all from four of the 16 districts each night. We did our first one on January 29th. We had to cancel the second one because of the horrible cold, and so now we're going to do the next three, February 11th, 12th, and 13th. At that point, the nominating committee will forward three names of the five people that they select to the governor for his consideration, and then he will take that under advisement. Those recommendations are not binding, but he will take those under advisement, and by state statute, he has to appoint the council members by March 4th. However, he has to file an intent to appoint 5 days prior to that, so and then he will inform the legislature of that intention to appoint earlier than the March 4th. But by March 4th, we will have the council named, and then they'll be sworn in at the council on March 6th. And so that is a, and then at that point, the Senate will have those names provided to them, and they'll go through the process of confirming them, however they serve immediately after they are appointed. So just so folks know right now, the members of the Dayton administration, that council, except for some of our members who have since left to go to other roles, including our former council member, Representative Elkins, they are still serving up until that new council is being seated, like I mentioned, by March 4th. So who we are, here is a picture of the council's board, and then the committees that the council operates. The committees shown here meet regularly. They consider issues and proposals presented by the council staff and make recommendations to the full council. We encourage public engagement on these issues. We also have advisory committees to a number of them, including the Transportation Advisory Board, Metropolitan Parks Open Space Commission, Livable Communities Advisory Committee, and others. And in those capacities, we have lots of engagements from local stakeholders and elected officials. This next slide here shows the three large areas that the council operates and conducts our business in: the community development area, environmental services, and transportation. Under each of those boxes shows the additional work that we do based on statutory authority that is provided to the council. So this is really important for the committee and the legislature to understand that the council operates only within the legislative authorities that are provided in statute. And I'll spend just a little bit more time on each of those here as I walk through these. So the community development functions of the council is where we administer the Land Planning Act, we prepare the regional development guides, we implement the Livable Communities Act, we deliver rental assistance through our Housing and Redevelopment Authority, we guide the regional parks and open we guide the regional parks and open space system, and we conduct research to support policy making. Right now, we are on the very end of this Metropolitan Land Planning Act program that started back in the decennial census back in 2010, and the council created its Metropolitan Development Guide, which is the Thrive MSP 2040 plan. At that point, we sent out our systems plans, and then we developed our systems and policy plans, sent out system statements to all of the cities in 2015, and then over the course of the last few years, the local comprehensive plan updates have been put together. And so statute requires that we prepare three different plans: the transportation policy plan, the water resources policy plan, and the regional parks plan. These are all built into this process, and that's what cities are then preparing as related to our regional development plan. They are reacting to it, and our system statements, they've developed their comprehensive plans based on those and send them back to the council for approval, and we are in the process of doing much of that right now. Next piece under community development really deals with regional parks, and it was established under the Regional Parks Act, which was adopted in 1974. The legislation said that the council must identify generally the areas which together with state facilities will meet the outdoor recreation needs of the people of the metropolitan area, and also establish criteria and priorities for the allocation of funds and for acquisition and development of the regional park system. And so this is a really big deal. Oftentimes people don't understand that the council has such a big role in the regional park system, but we do much of the planning along with the local agencies that operate the regional parks. They're also called the implementing agencies, and folks may understand them better by that name. But there are 10 implementing agencies that we work very, very closely with. There are 6 counties, 2 cities, and three cities, City of Minneapolis, the City of St. Paul, and the City of Bloomington, the 6 counties, and then the Three Rivers Park District also is one of the largest implementing agencies that we work with. And it's just, again, just really important to recognize that the council works very, very closely with these implementing agencies through funding, through the O&M funds that come through the general fund here from the state. We also get lottery and lieu of sales tax funds. We get legacy funds, and we also get general obligation bonding funds that then the council matches and helps fund these implementing agencies. But we view them as fantastic partners and really enjoy working with them and making sure that that our metro area has a robust investment in parks as well, because what people see the metropolitan area park system oftentimes as the kind of the state parks in the metro area. And so that is another really big deal that folks might not necessarily see that the council has that interaction with them. Council, as I mentioned, under our statutory authorities, has us facilitate the Livable Communities Grant Program. We have three of them: the Livable Communities Demonstration Grant Account, which supports development and redevelopment of housing, jobs, and services that demonstrate efficient and cost-effective use of land and infrastructure. We have the Local Housing Incentive Account, which produces and preserves affordable housing choices for low to moderate income folks. And then we also have the Tax-Based Revitalization Account, which cleans up contaminated sites for redevelopment that creates jobs and or produces affordable housing. We fund these through the council's property tax levy. The TIBRA, the Tax-Based Revitalization Account, comes off the top of the what am I trying to think of? The fiscal disparities. Thank you, Ms. Dyson. But yes, so that $5 million comes off the top of fiscal disparities and goes into funding the TIBRA account. As I mentioned before, we do not spend a lot of time at the legislature talking about the council's role in housing, but the council is a metropolitan housing, has a metropolitan housing and redevelopment authority. We are the largest administrator of the Federal Housing Choice Voucher Program in the state of Minnesota, and we've received HUD's highest rankings possible for 12 straight years for efficient and effective housing services. This is a map that shows all of the HREs in the metro area. As you can see, the council is in the yellow. That is where we administer those programs, and so we work in partnership with many of them. But again, this is one area that folks might not be aware of, the fact that we have a an HRA, Housing Redevelopment Authority, because most of that is truly federal funds that come to the council, and then we disperse them through that program. Just a little bit more detail on our HRA is that we serve over 7,000 low-income housing, low-income families with housing assistance throughout Anoka, Carver, and most of Suburban and Hennepin and Ramsey counties. And we distribute $56 million a year in rent subsidies to 2,500 private landlords each year. I'm going to shift to the work that we do in environmental services. We operate the regional wastewater treatment system, and we also carry out the water supply planning activities required under state statute as well. So, just spend a little bit of time on this slide. The council operates a $6 to $7 billion system through 8 wastewater treatment plants. We have 610 miles of sewer pipe throughout the metro area, and we have 60 pump stations that allows us to get that wastewater, pump it through the system, and then move it through really, really large interceptor pipes, which you can see is the green pipe down below that then pushes that flow that we call to our system in order to be treated. And we have a this program is basically funded through the wastewater fee. That so it's basically self-contained that way. So that's one of the reasons why we don't spend a whole lot of time at the legislature talking about it. But this is a massive program that we run just to be able to treat the metro's wastewater. And just to give you a little bit of an idea here of what that looks like, is that we average treatment of about 250 million gallons a day. And just to think about that, we could fill the Empire State Building in one day with the treatment of the water that we do every day. So we do that, and I mentioned, I keep pressing the wrong button, I apologize. So we do that through 8 wastewater facilities that we talked about before. We serve 108 communities and a population of, you know, the metro area, just right around 3 million people. And where we... after we treat the water, it is discharged either to the Mississippi River, the St. Croix River, or the Minnesota River. And our newest plant up in East Bethel, water is treated to almost drinking water quality and then discharged into the ground for groundwater recharge. But I had pictures of each of these facilities in here. I decided to take those out to spare everybody a little bit of time. But as you can see, our metro plant is by far our largest plant. And Madam Chair and members of the committee, there truly is nothing really sexy about a wastewater treatment plant, but it is a incredible facility that if you and the committee members or anybody would be interested in coming to look at this, it is it is amazing to see how this process works. And I am completely serious. I would love to be able to take you and your committee down there to see that at any point over the interim or over break or whatever you'd like to do. But it is truly amazing. The council's role in water supply planning is also laid out in statute. We carry out the planning activities addressed in the water supply needs of the metropolitan area. Again, I mentioned earlier some of the advisory committees. We have the Metro Area Water Supply Advisory Committee. This was established back in the 2005, 2006, 2007. Representative Garofalo and Representative Osmond at the time had that in the House. Back then, Senator Higgins in the Senate was carrying that bill. And it has been a really, really important new aspect to the council's roles and responsibilities because we assist and guide the council's water supply planning. We approve master water supply plans, and we appoint and collaborate with the technical advisory committee to make sure that we have enough water in our region. People look at the Twin Cities and state of Minnesota thinking that, you know, we are very water flush, but it's the fact is that we do have areas in the region that are have experienced water shortages, and we want to make sure that when we're looking at the development of the Twin Cities region, that we make sure that we're making really sound and informed decisions about water so that as our region grows, we're able to make sure we can serve those areas. So the planning objectives for regional water supply, again, is to make sure that we have adequate water supply supplies, and it's essential for our growth, livability, and prosperity. And I will, as you can see, the council's role is to have a regional water supply plan. We support local governments in making informed and effective decisions. We assist communities in developing what their local plans look like. We identify approaches to emerging issues. And I think that we have really strong relationships with our stakeholder groups. So we're really happy and proud of the work we're doing there, but it's essential for me to say again that this happens with the support of our water advisory members who are public folks that are weighing in on this. Those types of partnerships are, again, essential for us and the success of this program. Quickly then, I'll go to the council's role in transportation. We spend a lot of time with the transportation and finance and policy committees here at the council or at the Capitol, but just so the members understand that that we, in transportation, we do transit operations, and we also do planning. And under transit operations, we provide contract for and coordinate transit operations in both the bus and rail system, and we also provide financial assistance to local transit providers, which are, for the most part, the suburban transit providers. And we have some contracted Transit League service that we do in kind of the more exurban areas where there isn't regular route transit, but we also have some contracted regular route service, suburban service as well. As far as the council's role in planning, we are designated as the region's metropolitan planning organization, also mentioned as the MPO. That is a federal distinction. There's been a lot of discussion related to the council's role as the MPO recently, and I expect that will probably continue, but I just want folks to know that, again, that is a federal designation that is provided to the council through the Federal Highway Administration. We also, in our planning role, is that we do the long-term transportation planning and shorter-term federal funds programming. We do that in assistance with the Transportation Advisory Board, and those are the regional solicitation funds that come from the feds and that we disperse through our 34-member Transportation Advisory Board group to projects throughout the region. These are the regional transit services broken down a little bit more. The council delivered services are regular route bus. We operate the Metro Blue Line and Green Line light rail lines. We also operate the Metro Red Line bus, which runs through the Chairs District down in Eagan and extends down to eventually extend down to Lakeville. We operate the only arterial bus system we have in the region right now, which is the A line, which is along Snelling Avenue, runs up to the Rosedale Mall, heads down through St. Paul to Fort Parkway, and then crosses the river and connects at the 46th station, the light rail station. We operate the North Star commuter rail line, and then we also provide regional support and rideshare services. And so that is like our dollar ride type service. Under contracted services, the biggest one here is Metro Mobility. We spend a lot of time talking about Metro Mobility and the issues that we're having with that in the Transportation Committee. I understand we're going to talk a little bit about that today as well, and so that is great. Under contracted services, again, we have some regular route services that we do. I mentioned the transit dial-a-ride. Again, that's the exurban service for areas that don't have regular route service that you're able to call and schedule a ride. And then the Metro Van Pool, which is a program mostly federally funded that we allow people to set up a van pool to get them from their homes to their work. But they do that with a group of folks. They pool folks together to do that. And then our suburban transit provider services, these are our partners, the Maple Grove, Plymouth, Southwest Transit, and Minnesota Valley Transit Authority are the suburban transit providers. We work closely with them in order to deliver that service. And I took MBTA into work today. We ran through the Egan Park and Ride, and it was slick, considering how bad the traffic was. Representative Kosnick knows it was interesting coming up 35E this morning. So I hopped the bus in order to make sure I was here.
Good to hear.
Yep. This is the shifting to the planning functions of the council, the MPO functions. We perform the federal and state mandated planning. The long range plan is through our transportation policy plan. The short range, we do the transportation improvement plan. We do that with MnDOT. We have our unified planning work program, and then we also do major transportation studies. We allocate all those federal funds through the competitive solicitation overseen by the TAB, the Transportation Advisory Board. We coordinate planning activities with MnDOT, transit operators, the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and the local governments. And then we ensure public input in planning and federal funds programming. So it's a very large aspect of the council as well. But the MPO function is something, again, when we talk about governance issues, the MPO function is oftentimes a part of that. And I can speak to that later if people would like. Because there are some issues related to the council being only one being the only MPO in the country that doesn't have elected officials on it. That is true. However, most MPOs only have federal funds that they disperse. So when you have local elected officials serving on your MPO, there isn't a conflict of interest. When you have local elected officials serve on the council, who's the MPO, where we do comprehensive planning, we provide grants through livable communities, where we oversee other functions, the council can't be the regulated and the regulator at the same time, and that is one of the reasons why we are different than other MPOs. And I would argue that many regions say that they are envious of the council because we're able to look at all of the different long-range planning functions together, and that's what makes us unique. And I know we have lots of debate about that, and that's perfectly fine, but that, just for a little bit of context about what makes us different, that is truly what the difference is between our MPO and other MPOs, because that conflict of interest isn't there, because all they are doing is dispersing federal dollars, where we, as I mentioned, have all of these other statutory responsibilities that create what we have called an incompatibility of office, or the state or the courts have said that there is a incompatibility of office there. So just a little bit of background. I will hustle through this. Keep going the wrong way. So council budget development, we operate on a calendar year. The state functions on a fiscal year. We operate much more like a municipality. We work with our city and county partners who also work on calendar years. We go through the levy setting process and rate setting process so that cities are able to also determine what they are doing related to their levies, in particular to setting what the wastewater rate will be, so the cities can be informed on that. and a number of other things. But we do operate on a calendar year as a whole, but we then work with the legislature on a fiscal year issues when we talk about how we get funding through the motor vehicle sales tax, the general fund for the regional park system, how we get general fund funds for metro mobility system, and all of these different functions. So overall, the state funding of what we receive at the council is a smaller part of our overall budget, but I will get into that here in just a little bit more detail. So our calendar year 2019 operating budget is $1.1 billion. As you can see, 70% of that is for operations, 17% is for debt service. That debt service is mostly made up of debt service for our regional transit capital bonds, which we come to the legislature to receive authority for. We use those bonds in order to be the local match for federal dollars to replace our buses. That's by and large where those dollars are coming from. And then it's also to finance the debt for our what we match for the regional park system. So again, those dollars are council dollars, but they are pushed out into the 10 implementing agencies in order to help move forward their programs and their projects and their capital plan. We have, again, pass-through programs, which is our livable communities programs. It's also our HRA function, where we pass those funds out to those Section 8 voucher folks. Our calendar, or the uses by division, again, transportation is 61% of that, environmental services is 28%. That $305 million number, again, is contained through our wastewater fee, and so that's self-funded. Regional administration, which is basically the administrative function that helps, that coordinates the different divisions, is very small. Community development is 10%, and that 10%, again, is our community development folks. It's the folks that run our livable communities program. They are our planners, and they are also the folks that run our housing and redevelopment authority. So FTEs by division, we've got 4,575 employees at the council. The majority, vast majority of those folks come from transportation. Those are our planners, but for the most part it is Metro Transit operators, admin, mechanics. It's the folks that run our transportation system. Community development, regional administration, environmental services, again, are small in comparison to that. Our FTEs have grown recently over the years, particular to transportation. For the most part, that is because we have opened project offices for the Southwest LRT line, the Botno LRT line, and the Gold line. And then we've also opened the Green line in 2014, so we have additional drivers and we have additional support staff in order to support those functions. And again, this shows the overall budget. Much of that is also supported through funding from the counties as well for some of these project offices as well. And some of the transportation committee members may recall that on Southwest in particular, the state is not funding any of the capital or the operating for that line. So the funding that is supporting and the employees that are being supported there are oftentimes being funded through other sources. Our funding sources for the operating budget, again, this is important. The state revenues are 38% of that. The motor vehicle sales tax, which we get 36% of the 100% of MBES that goes into metro area transit. We've got $131 million of general fund. Again, that is 89.8 million dollars of general fund goes into transit. We also get funds for the regional park system there, and we did receive some one-time funding from the state in 2017 to help fill our gap that we had in metro mobility and bus. And so that's where you're seeing some of the calendar year / fiscal year not exactly match up, but that is where our calendar year budget is for what is the state's share in this. for our property tax levy. We have an $87 million levy for property taxes. Again, the bulk of that is for transit debt service. That goes to our regional transit capital bonds that we come to the legislature every year. 2 years ago, spent a lot of time talking with Representative Hertas and Representative Kosnick about these bonds, and so that is where we are paying the debt service for those in that area. We've got our park service debt. There's the $5 million for the tax-based revitalization account. That is the brownfield cleanup account. And then our livable communities demonstration account is $11.4 million of that. And so that is where our property tax levy. So our overall taxing authority is $87 million out of a $1.1 billion budget. Our capital program, we have an authorized capital program of $2.88 billion. Our six-year capital program is $4.68 billion. Much of this is, at least on the transit waste piece, again, that is funding that we have secured for our current transit waste. So that includes, it's not just Metropolitan Council money. Most of this is money that's coming from our partners at the counties. Wastewater, again, that is completely self-contained. Other transit, again, that is funding that we receive either general obligation bonding dollars from the past for those types of programs or for those types of projects. And then you see our parks program is 6% of our overall capital program. As we get additional authority from the state, they get adopted into our program. Representative Elkins is very familiar with that. We get this. We do budget amendments pretty regularly at the council. When authorization comes in, we amend it into our current program, or else, and then out of our six-year plan. If that money was or if that was previously set in that six-year plan. But Madam Chair, members, I burned through this pretty quick, but if you have any specific questions, I'm happy to help. I know that you have folks here to testify about a couple other things, and you have another couple bills. So I'll just stop there and take any questions that you have.
Thank you. I may take you up on the wastewater treatment plan. And the one thing I did want to mention, I know that you just gave a review recently of your proposed budget to the Legislative Commission on Metro Governance, so maybe you might want to take a couple minutes to explain your relationship to that group as well.
That's, Madam Chair and members, thank you for raising that. So in 2001, the legislature was fighting over some governance issues as well, and they were thinking that maybe the council needed some additional oversight. And so what at the time it was Senator Representative Rest and Senator Cohen, Representative McElroy in particular, who were working and decided to create this commission called the Legislative Commission on Metropolitan Government. And what they decided to do was to create 14 members who serve in the metro area. The majority in the House has 4 members, the majority in the Senate has 4 members, the minority in the House has 3 members, and the minority in the Senate has 3 members. And those 14 members have statutory responsibilities to review the council's operating capital budgets and then and also the overall work plan of the council. And so how this has worked over the previous 4, 5, 6 years is when the council goes through the process of adopting a public hearing draft of our budget, what I do is send that out to the members, the 14 members, and ask for any comment prior to the council adopting that budget in December. So this year, I think I sent it out like around October 24th is when the council adopted that draft. And then in early December, the Legislative Commission came together and had us present our calendar year 2019 capital and operating budget at that time. So we did. And so we met with those members, talked about the levy situation. We talked about our long-range plan as far as our capital plan. And then we talked a little bit about where we sit financially with the state. And so I'll just speak very briefly to that. Heading into this biennial budget, We currently have a $36.5 million deficit in our Metro Mobility program, which is both a federally and state mandated program. So we need to address that. The good news is that we do not have a deficit in bus, and we do not have a deficit in our rail operations. So that is good. But I'm also going to throw a giant asterisk out there and say that it's also dependent on what happens with the motor vehicle sales tax forecast, which will come out at the end of the month. And so when we see what that happens, since our transit budget relies on on the motor vehicle sales tax for about 55 to 60% of our overall budget is MVEST. When MVEST goes up, it's great. When it goes down, it's not so great. And so we have major swings in what it looks like for us to what our revenues will look like. The other thing that has happened recently is the motor vehicle sales tax. It previously was growing at about 3-4% rate is what the state had been forecasting. They revised that down to about 2%, and so that changes what our future expectations are as well. And so we're going to see all of that, the new version of that occur in at the end of the month or early March when we get the results of what the February forecast. We will spend a lot of time talking about that in the Transportation Finance Committee, but. Madam Chair and members, that's just kind of the gist of what we cover at the Legislative Commission. We also have been able to talk about issues related to our sewer advisory charge there in the past, our service advisory charge, which is our wastewater connection fee. We've been able to talk about other functions that are that the council have. We've talked about the Southwest Light Rail line there a lot, and so it's a place where those 14 members have a chance to convene and look at issues related to the council outside of the regular legislative process. And I actually think it's a good thing for us to have informed members from the legislature understand where we're at, because it helps us when we get to the legislature to have folks say, yeah, we've heard that before. We understand what the council's doing. We may agree with it, we may disagree with it, but at least there is an understanding of where the council's going on.
Thank you very much. Comments, questions from the members, and it's Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chair. See, Mr. Shedlin, just a question. I am looking at the Citizens League suggestions. They have the committee, of course, as you're aware of. Yep. And one of their suggestions is to fully deploy the Met Council's current authority to reduce concentrations of poverty. You're probably familiar with that section of the Citizens League.
Yep.
And I'm just curious as to what is the intention of the Met Council? Are they going to take up the Citizens League's suggestions to fully deploy the recommendations to reduce poverty? I'm going to do a caveat. Personally, I think that first falls in the neighborhood of the nonprofits and the faith-based organizations. And then when it's too overwhelming, then it should go to the legislature. So. This seems like a little bit out of the norm that the Met Council really should be involved in, although it's an important issue, so we all should be involved in it. But I think the authority should first start personally with the neighborhood, faith-based nonprofits, and then the legislature. So what say you?
Madam Chair and Representative, good question. I think, to be clear, that is a policy decision of the council. I'm not the council's policy maker. I don't take votes on these. I know Representative Elkins can attest to that. I don't do that. I will also say that it is a good question. I will say, as I mentioned earlier, that we are in the process of seating a new council, and that they will be in place on March 4th. And so that will absolutely be a decision that our new council members, those 16 members, and our new chair will have to discuss. And I would be out of line to speak to what I think a future council is going to do related to that issue. I think I do think that if you would like, I'd be happy to circle back with you and the members of this committee. We can come back here in a month or so and have that conversation and talk about where we're at. But I'm not at liberty to say or really to have much of an opinion about that, to be completely honest with you.
Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, thank you, Mr. Shedlin. I can certainly agree with that. I think you're correct. The question probably really wasn't necessarily directed to you, although I did. I think, Madam Chairman, perhaps at one point we do have you know, Representative Elkins and perhaps the board, the chairman or woman, should they, when they come, to come before the committee, tackling that one topic is very arduous and very costly, and it takes a village, if you will. But I think it would be probably behoove us to, for this committee, is since it's formed as a local government reform, that we hear from that board on their intentions of that. Let alone, you know, transportation and wastewater, they got their hands full already, and their budget is in deficit on the transportation alone. I would recommend perhaps maybe they would be able to testify and inform us on some of their priorities, especially handling poverty and equity within the neighborhoods.
So noted. We'll look into that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Chair Mason and Mr. Shetman. Thanks for being here. You'd mentioned the Legislative Oversight Committee. Yep. And in the past, you and I have worked, could we get copies of the new budget? It was pretty comprehensive, and I found it quite helpful to kind of go through and understand some of what Representative McDonald talked about, the scope of the council and where things flow. So if we could get copies of that, or at least me, I think it would be helpful for this committee. We talked about the $36.5 million deficit for Metro Mobilities. Quite an issue. Metro mobility type services and paratransit services in outstate Minnesota, outside the metro, I believe they're funded through the Department of Human Services.
I mean that. Madam Chair, they're funded.
If you could clarify, yeah.
Yep. Funded through the Department of Transportation.
Okay. All right.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, thanks for clarifying that. I was curious if they were funded significantly different, but it sounds like somewhat similar. That was kind of my questions for right now. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I can clarify that just a little bit. There is also certain medical assistance type service, and that is coordinated by the Department of Human Services, but the paratransit service that we provide as part of Metro Mobility is the Greater Minnesota similar service is funded through MnDOT.
Thank you. Any other members? Is there anybody from the audience that has comments or questions? Okay. Mr. Hughes, would you like to come forward?
And Madam Chair, I will be happy to send members a copy of the budget. I can send a link to it, or else if people would like prefer a hard copy, I can deliver those as well. I have a copy in my bag. I'll give to Representative Kosnick here, but I'll send everybody else a link if that's okay. Great.
That will suffice.
I'll
Thank
go
you.
Sit over here. Would you like me to wait here with Marks?
You might probably want to wait.
Okay.
If you will identify yourself and proceed, please.
Chair Maslin, members of the committee, my name is Mark Hughes, and Chair Maslin has been very gracious this week, and so has Anna, about opening up their office to hear what I'm about to say and put a letter that was given to me by a senator. It's in your packets, and I'll get to that in a minute. While everything in life is not perfect, I'm upset. I'm upset for the disabled community, for the vulnerable adults that I feel we've taken advantage of, those who are younger, those who are older, those who can't fend for themselves. Let me explain. I'm going to do with the most current things, and then we'll get to the meat of the letter of the January 4th incident. Yesterday, I was coming back here from the University of Minnesota after Carlson first Tuesday, and the doors on the lift all of a sudden flew open. We're going down Oak Street. And that normally doesn't happen, and I don't mean to laugh, but I was surprised. And things happen. I haven't called the center yet on that, but I probably will. That's pretty serious. Then after a Timberwolves game last weekend, I had a 11 o'clock pickup to go back home. And I called to ask, it was early, and the dispatcher told me, well, the driver's either got the two-way radio turned off or turned down, but not answering. So I asked the driver about that on my way up the freeway to go home. And she said, I would have come to pick you up early. Nobody told me nothing about it. So there are While these are trivial, when we're going to talk about what we're going to talk about in a minute, there are some real management problems. And I think that's the biggest problem with this system today, is management's not paying attention. We're paying some big money for management, and they're just not doing it. Now, to the incident that I'm really here for today, and that's January 4th, 2019. Back then, about a month ago, there was some pretty mild weather, and we couldn't all believe it was 30 and 40 degrees here. I came out of a meeting, and I called Metro Mobility to see where my ride was, and I couldn't get through on the phone. What I was told, the big problem was that the Met Council computers couldn't communicate with Met's computer, a switch has failed, consequently the backups didn't go off. So there we were. But it bothers me when you have a business and you can't answer the phone. It really, truly does. If there's anything that bugs me the worst, it's that. And so now, once again, we've taken advantage of vulnerable adults who can't call and see where the rides are, and where some of us are 2, 3, and 4 hours delayed because the computer's not working, but neither is the phone. Where is management? All right, and then I had a meeting with Nick Thompson. He said, well, it's going to happen again. I said, it better not. And now there will be backups in the dispatch stations. Why wasn't there before? There are a lot of unanswered questions that need to be answered here. We can't answer them today, but now I'm going to ask for a meeting with Norris Slawick, chair of the Met Council, and the governor's office. I want something done. I want it done now, and I think I speak for a bunch of other the disabled community here. We can't have these vulnerable adults out riding around really not being taken care of. You got to be able to call. The phone system has to be independent of the computer. Right now, it's not. Somebody's got to take responsibility, currently. Thank you. Any questions?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question, Mark, Mr. Hughes.
Mark is fine.
And or Mr. Shetland, could this event happen again? I know it's a broad question, but is it a possibility that the main phone situations and the backup could fail again? And then I have a follow-up suggestion.
Mr. Shetland.
Madam Chair and members, I would like to say no, but we are currently doing an investigation as to what occurred. And until we figure out what was the problem here, I mean, it was a failure. And, you know, it's hard, you know, words are cheap, and we apologize for what happened. And we want to get that straightened out. And, you know, of course, it makes matters worse when this happens in the middle of winter when we when we have folks that are stuck. And so to answer your question, I can't tell you that it won't happen again. I can tell you I hope it doesn't, and I hope we're able to let folks know what happened, or, you know, how we're going to fix it. I'm also going to help Mr. Hughes accommodate him with a meeting with our chairwoman in order to make sure that that she understands how this is impacting folks from the who are using our Metro Mobility service. And while this is an aside, when we put together the nominating committee for this Metropolitan Council, we included a disability transit advocate on that committee to make sure that their voice is being heard, along with
and it wasn't me, so that
and it wasn't Mark. We like Mark. Don't get me wrong. Mark and I have been friends a long time.
Yeah,
but it's it is something that we are aware of, and we are taking very serious. And Representative, I wish I had the right answer for you, but the investigation is being conducted as we speak, and there was an issue between the Met Council and the Minute program, and we'll get to the bottom of it.
Representative McDonald.
Just real quickly, Madam Chair, I know we have bills. And just a suggestion, maybe the Chair, Mr. Representative Elkins, you can look at that, a safety net fail-proof, perhaps a third. Nobody wants any of the right. Disabled out in the cold, especially when it's 28 below, nobody. But as a fail-safe, what do you call it, safety net, Uber, a third option,
yep.
That those who are on Metro Mobility have an opportunity in their hand, if they do have a phone, to be able to contact an Uber driver, and the state will pick up the tab like we do with the Metro Mobility. That's just a third last option. What do you think?
May I answer that?
Mr. Hughes.
Rep. McDonald, Chair Maslin. About a year ago, there was a special committee to try to figure out I missed the task force on how to run a less expensive, and that's not the right word, efficient mobility. Thanks, Judd.
Yeah.
Metro mobility system. See, I. Mm-hmm. But and we talked about Uber, and as a matter of fact, some representatives did come and speak, and they said that they couldn't guarantee the drivers like Metro Mobility can now. And the problem is that a lot of people probably could ride it, but we have a lot more vulnerable adults who wouldn't know what car to get into, who the driver is, what the car looks like, this type of thing. So we need this kind of service. And their group homes and their moms and dads tell me, no, don't get in a stranger's car. And so you're kind of defeating, you know, those words. But it is a solution, but I don't know if it's the right one when we have vulnerable adults like that. We want to protect them.
And Madam Chair,
Mr. Shetland.
Just to add on to Mr. Hughes' comments, we are looking at options related to Uber and Lyft. We spent a lot of time with Representative Kosnick over the last couple of years looking at other ways to deliver that service. Again, what Metro Mobility is door-through-door service, and so the driver actually gets out of the bus or goes into the facility and will take the rider, secure them, provide the ride, unsecure them, bring them in through the door, which Uber does not do that. There's also a major certification process that we go through for our drivers in order to make sure that we have competent folks that are able to do that. And again, many of these, as Mr. Hughes mentioned, many of these vehicles are not ADA compliant. You know, so it's just, but there is a segment of the Metro Mobility users who may be able to use an Uber, and we are looking at that. I mean, we truly are trying to find a new way to do that because we think that we may be able to deliver that service under normal circumstances cheaper. And so there's a bill moving to help us look at some of that.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Allen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. To some of these questions, this question of just general systems redundancy, I think it's probably just much broader than just a Met Council issue. In fact, we're going to be constituting an MNIT oversight group that will be bipartisan. Representative Nash and I and a few others will all be part of that. And I think that this general issue of do we have adequate redundancy in our system so that we can promptly have fail over to a backup system so we don't see interruptions like this. It'll be something that we look at.
Thank you. Comments from the table? Thank you very much. We need to be moving on. Is there anybody from the audience that would like to additional comments or questions? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Freiber?
Sure. Just a comment to Representative McDonald's points. The letter from Chair Slawik that's in our packet here does mention on the third paragraph of page 2 that the council had authorized reimbursement for cab, Uber, or Lyft rides and apologized for the inconveniences. So it sounds like that is happening in some circumstances already.
That's okay. It. Light minds think alike.
Thank you. Did you want one more comment?
I don't.
Okay.
And I'm happy to follow up with any other questions you have after this, and we'll go from there.
Thank you very much for coming.
Yep.
Representative McDonald, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I did.
And would you like to make a motion?
Make a motion to accept the minutes as written.
Okay. Is there all those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
So moved. Thank you very much. And I'm going to turn the chair over to Representative Elkins while Representative Fisher and I go over our bills.
Yeah.
Are we ready?
I think we are ready.
Okay. We have two bills before us today, and they're very closely related. And I was wondering if it would be worthwhile, Ms. Dyker, would it be useful going through what are some of the similarities and differences are between these two?
Mr. Chair, if the committee would like that, I can do with that.
I think what we'll probably end up doing is passing one of these, holding the other one over, because they're very, very similar, and probably time is probably best spent figuring out what is the difference between the two. Though, I don't, Chair Mason, would you like to begin by just giving a general overview of what we're trying to accomplish here?
Okay. I think it's fair to say that most of us are well aware that the Met Council has a lot of controversy associated with it, and the bills that we're going to be going over today have to do with the stagger terms, so it makes some degree of change in how the Met Council operates. And as the chair said, they're very similar, and I am going to make two changes to if yeah. You'll bear with me. I would like to move the amendment, a technical amendment that should be in your packet. So I'd like to move that amendment before we begin.
Oh. Madam Chair, I think we should move the bill.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I'd like to move House File 192 to Government Operations. And I'll also move 307 as well to Government Operations at this point, and then we'll deal with the final resolution after we're done.
Yeah, 192 and 370.
I'm sorry. Thank you. It is 370. Thank you.
Okay.
And so first of all, to get the my bill in order, if you would approve the technical amendment that's in your packet. It's A1. Okay. And it just gives an effective date that's necessary. Right, it's at the end of, at the very end of the bill. So it gives a date. So if you would move approval of that, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. I'll move approval of the Amendment A1.
Okay, and the other changes I'd like to deal with, again, is I appreciate your indulgence, is to delete the Equity Advisory Committee and the SAC Committee that's on here as well, because those have now been taken care of. This bill was one of the bills that we had last year, so this is getting it up to date for what we need for right now. And before Ms. Dyson does the comparison, Representative Fisher, do you want to introduce yourself and make some comments?
Okay, excuse me a second. I think Ms. Dyson has some clarification.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mason, if you are moving to delete Sections 3 and 4, the Equity Advisory Committee language and the Sewer Availability Charges Stakeholder Group, you would not need the A1 amendment, because the A1 amendment provides the effective date and application clause to Section 4. So,
okay. So we get
one or the other.
All right. So I want to move to delete the
Sections 3 and 4?
Exactly.
Okay.
And just by way of explanation, the one provision establishes an equity advisory committee at the recommendation of the Citizens League. The second one establishes a sewer availability charge stakeholder group, which was also part of the Citizens Group recommendations. Both of these bodies have existed. Actually, the sewer availability charge stakeholder group has already completed its work. And as testifiers will testify to later, the Met Council regularly constitutes sewer availability stakeholder groups virtually at the drop of a hat, and has the existing authority to do that. We're basically just cleaning it up by taking provisions out that have effectively already been implemented under the Metropolitan Council's existing statutory authority.
Sir.
Yeah, we should probably just go ahead and vote on the removal of those sections on this amendment. So the A1 amendment is unnecessary, but we need to vote on the removal of these two basically superfluous sections. Mr. Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you identify by line item where you're talking about?
Yep. Basically, on the original bill, we're talking about the provisions, basically just about everything that's on page 4. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hertas, in House File 192,
192 is what we're talking
page
about.
3, it begins on line 3.27. It's sections 3 through the end of the bill, through 4.23, sections 3 and 4 of House File 192. Are the motion that Representative Mason made to remove those sections.
Are the references to those sections? Because there's in Section 3, there's existing verbiage that is left unchanged.
Take out the entire section.
All of the changes in those sections.
Correct. You just delete the sections.
Okay.
The motion is to delete Sections 3 and 4 of the bill.
Okay. Is everyone clear?
There is mine.
We're basically removing stuff that's superfluous because it's stuff that was recommended by the Citizens League originally but has already been accomplished, essentially.
Very good.
Okay. With that, all in favor of making those changes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Changes are adopted.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to present 370 here. What I'll do is kind of focus a little bit on some of the differences between the bill I have and the bill that Chair Mason has. There's just a few minor areas where there's differences. One is that mine, I would require the governor to explain to the nominating committee in writing why any rejected finalist for appointment, so that we would know why the reason was that they were denied. Particularly if the member that was appointed is on the list of finalists that is recommended.
Mr. Chair, point of order.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We were just talking about 192. We just did a motion.
Mr. Fisher is we're going to consider them more or less the same because we're basically what we'll end up doing is adopting one of these and laying the other one over. So I think essentially what the discussion we'll be having is which of these two we want to have move on.
Okay. You weren't clear when we were moving on to.
Sorry.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. That is one difference. The other minor difference that is out there is on the nominating committee makeup is instead of having 7 appointments by the governor, changing that to 6 appointments by the governor, and then that the extra person seat then would be the city. So it would be 6 by the governor, 4 by the city, 3 by Metro Cities. The bill that Chair Mason has 7 by the governor, 3 by the cities, 3 by Metro Cities. And the reason I'm going with 4 to the city group is because I feel that they need a little larger voice at the table because most of the decisions that the Met Council makes impacts the cities much more so than they do the counties. And I want to make sure that they've got just a little bit more voice at the table because of that. And so those are the bigger differences between my bill and the bill that Chair Mason has.
All right, thank you. I would observe that, yeah, in all other respects, in terms of the staggering of the terms, they're basically identical. So the essential differences between the two are in the constitution of the nominating convention, whether there should be 3 or 4 municipal elected officials. I would note in that regard is that when you look at the statutory allocation of the membership of the Transportation Advisory Board, for example, AMM appoints 10 members. There are 7 county members, so it's been kind of the custom in that body as well for there to be slightly more municipal members than county members. I'm not sure that I would characterize it exactly in terms of importance. Its difference is usually the council is interacting more with the counties on transportation-related issues. Most of the land use and water-related issues are more the council is dealing more with municipalities on those. So, and then I would say that with respect to the others, the other main difference in Mr. Fisher's bill, it requires the governor to provide greater explanation for why he's not accepting one of the recommended nominees posed by the nominating committee. And I would say the significance of that is that under Mr. Fisher's bill, my own opinion expressing here is that it would make it slightly more awkward for a governor to make patronage appointments, is the way I would interpret that. So, discussion, questions? Mr. Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think one of the problems I see, unlike a lot of our elected offices, is the overlapping of, this is an organization that has basically been the prize of any governor who wins office. And he, therefore, has control over 60% of the state's population and a region as a whole. So that said, the way this is set up, and I understand the desire of having staggered terms, but it looks to me as though a governor can saddle the next administration with appointees into the next governorship. And so it would seem to me that the right thing to do with regard to wanting to have these members of the Met Council accountable to the public and to taxpayers because they have levy authority over taxpayers, that these terms should coincide with elections and maybe represent a change or a mood in the constituencies that are making decisions in each election cycle. So I would have some concerns about the staggering of these terms, and in the past we've seen new administrations come in and replace, I think Governor Dayton maybe replaced 16 of 17 members when he first gained office, and these are people that the administration is going to work with. I frankly think that there's a lot of reform that needs to be met, but I'll just keep my comments to the issues in this bill.
Okay, thank you. Chair Mason.
Thank you, Chair. I have a problem with the governor having ultimate control of the Met Council. This is meant to be a regional authority. And we know that we've had difficulties making changes with the past couple of governors. So my thought is to try to do this in increments. To me, having staggered terms at least gives some continuity to the body itself, which I think is important, and that is the main reason that I'm supporting this. And I think we also have to bear in mind that, yes, right now it is in the governor's corner because this body has had a number of issues over the couple of decades. So, as I said, my bill, it's making one simple change that I hope everybody will at least think is in good form, where we have a continuity of the body rather than starting new all the time.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to respond, and then we'll come to Councilman or Representative McNaughton's question. But from my perspective as a member, Representative Hertaus is correct. It has been the custom with each change of administration for there to be a wholesale change in the membership of the council, and there hasn't been any continuity at all. The learning curve for new council members is quite steep. As Mr. Shetland presented, the council has much more complicated operations and responsibilities than most people imagine. I've given two presentations on Met Council 101 to Rotary Club groups in Bloomington and Edina over the last year, and invariably what happens is everybody comes up to me afterwards and said, I had no idea that the Met Council did all of those things. Having the staggered terms would at least ease that transition, because one of the other observations I've had in my 20-plus year public service career is that in any body where the governing body is subject to frequent and wholesale turnover, what happens is that all of the institutional knowledge resides in the staff, and the organization and the process become very staff driven. And that's another observation that I would make about the Met Council as well. During the next 4 years, the primary responsibility of the council, because of where we are in the planning cycle, will be the review of the comprehensive plans that cities and counties have been developing over the last several years and have now submitted for approval. Certainly in this case, it would be very useful to the new council that there be at least a few members of the former council around that understand the history and understand the adopted policies under which those local comprehensive plans are to be evaluated. That would be a very difficult thing for an entirely new council to have to go through as part of their training exercise. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Chair Elkin. As a past mayor of community that was under the jurisdiction of and still is under the jurisdiction of Met Council, I couldn't agree with you more that the representatives from the council that come out and talk to the cities are really just the messengers. You're absolutely correct. It is staff driven. And changing that culture with staggered elections doesn't transcend that issue.
It mitigates it a little bit.
The agenda of the council is staff-driven, and it may staff may be directed by members of the council, but nonetheless, because of the learning curve you mentioned. So I might suggest with regard to the staggered term part of it, I guess you could have a governor appoint a member for a four-year term that will serve that whole four-year term while he's governor. He could also appoint some of the members to be a two-year term still during that 4 years, but when that term is up, then that individual is up for election and staggering that so that you could try to avoid too much carryover from one administration to the next, but still implementing the staggered term. So it's just a thought.
Representative McDonald, did you still have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. A question and just a comment, too, for the authors. I appreciate, and I think most people can appreciate the intent of it, Representative Mason, to really have some continuity there and some really local representation from the districts. Although Wright County, the county that I represent, are not in the seven-county metropolitan area, and as a former mayor and listening to mayors in my counties, we are happy with that, and we hope to keep it that way. So I don't really have a horse in this race, if you will, except for many of my constituents and family and friends work in the metropolitan area, so this does affect that. But I think that with Vice Chair Elkins said it best when he visits the Rotaries, that they say, I had no idea the Met Council did all these things.
But
so with that said,
yeah,
wouldn't you think it would be best then, and I think that there's a wide appeal to this amongst many folks involved in it, that we have an elected body, this would be elected positions that have the authority, elected by the people who live in these districts and not an appointed by the government. After all, we're we're not appointed by the governor, thankfully. I let Wray County decide if they want to elect, put me in, not the governor. So don't you think it'd be best maybe have an oral amendment instead of appointed, elected positions, elected staggered positions?
Well, there is a separate bill that would establish an elected Met Council. It's not before us today, but it could come before us as well. But there is an existing House file for that. Mr. Fisher, did you have comments that you wanted to make?
Thank you, Vice Chair Elkins. Going to the point a little bit brought up by Representative McDonald, there have been different groups that have looked at the issue of whether it should be elected or not over the years, and I know that the League of Women Voters have studied this off and on, and one of the things that they've been very concerned is moving to an elected council, because then you start getting not just the campaigning going on, but you start becoming much more parochial than looking at things from a regional vantage. And that's some of the things that they've cited in the past, and that's one of the concerns. If you're looking at a regional body, you want to make sure that while you've got people elected from specific areas, that they're able to take a look at things from a parochial point of view. When you start moving to the elections, all of a sudden those elections can start driving very regional ways that might be good for the local area that the council members elected from, but would be bad policy for the entire region. And when you've got things like sewer that you're trying to make sure that is being developed in a way and carried out to meet the needs of the entire community and not just one area versus the other area of Metro, which sometimes has happened in the past. When you've got water planning that's going to be happening out there, you want to be taking a look at the water sustainability across the entire region. What may look good for one region may hurt other regions that have got elected people in the Met Council. And so those are the kind of things that I want to make sure that when we've got a planning agency view, they're looking at it as a planning, what makes sense for the entire region, not just for one small community.
Representative Chair Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative McDonald. There are probably a number of changes that should be made to this body, mm-hmm. but trying to get anything done as a major reform would be, how would I say, a daunting task. Mm-hmm. And you should, you're thinking right, though, you probably should be, we should be adding more counties to this. Because they,
I don't think he wants
well,
that.
Well, you may not want it, but it would make it would be logical to be doing that. So there are changes to be made. As I said, I'm just trying to make one change to at least get us forward. I'm going in increments because I don't think we can do the whole reform at one time.
That's my view as well. It's just a step in the right direction. I think Representative Codd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fisher and Representative Mason, thank you for taking this on so quickly. You know, last year we did kind of decide how we were going to try to do some reform, and I think there's agreement that reform is needed, but in what manner, and similar to the discussion here, and at what points. So I think we took the position that let's go big and bold and try to get something done, which obviously failed. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate your approach here to go incrementally. I think we could do a little bit more than that, but is it possible, and this I guess would be a question to both the committee but really the authors, both of them, I appreciate Representative Fisher's breakdown of the six selected by the governor, four for metro cities, and three appointees from the counties, but I wonder, you know, if we should have a discussion. It seems there's a difference between the 14 days and the 21 days waiting period before the appointment's made. I think 14 days is probably adequate, in my opinion. I'd appreciate more discussion on that. But mm-hmm. And then Representative Fisher's language that has the written explanation for rejecting the finalists, I think that's important for some transparency. So if we could kind of blend those kind of things, three items kind of blended in a new bill might be something. I'm curious if that's something you guys would be agreeable to as authors and what the rest of the committee thinks, but those are kind of the three sticking points that I think we could probably have some agreement to merge these bills, but there's probably other things that our side of the aisle would like to try to reform too, but I think this is a good start.
Thank you. I appreciate the input on it, and I think that's one of the things that is great about the committee, having the opportunity to talk about both bills here. Mm-hmm. I'm very open to the suggestions that are out there, and would be very open to working with Chair Mason to make sure that we've got some good things going forward. I think that we're very close on a lot of issues, and to be able to continue this process would be great.
Yeah, and I would say I agree with your comments as well, Representative Kosnick.
Mr. Chair, we could even call it the Fisher-Mason-Kosnick bill.
Thank you. I'm okay with that, too, if that's what it takes to get it through. Any other questions or comments? I would echo, I think I agree with the direction you're going in. Mm-hmm. Representative Firtas.
Yeah, thank you again. Representative Fisher, you did make a comment about the interests of just one individual city, but this is a regional issue, and it's multi-county. Mm-hmm. And in particular, the district that I represent represents the developing edge or fringe of the metropolitan region on the west side of the metropolitan region. So we have an abundance of land where growth can be accommodated. And with regard to these districts within the Met Council, we really wouldn't be electing an individual based on the whim of a city as you characterized it, but if you had districts or regional districts, a map of this seven-county metropolitan area, that you would have representation from those geographic areas. And I would maintain that there should be weight given not necessarily to distribution or allocation of population in the manner of determining these districts, but it should be done by geographic area, because the folks that live in that area that are going to be most impacted by the changes are heavily affected by, for the lack of better terms, the tyranny of the majority, even though that's not the vision of their area or their community. So they should be weighted with regard to their area or region as a specific area. So this is a complex problem. Mm-hmm. It's something that's been around for 40 years or more, and it's frankly gotten so big, and I would point out to those who are new that this MPO is operating at a size and a scale and a budget mm-hmm. that is larger than the next six largest MPOs in the nation in terms of its budget and its size. So it's gotten too big, it's been on mission creep, and these issues need to be addressed, because there's a lot of resentment about what the vision is from central planning downtown and urban area and the urban core as to what the vision is in certain areas of the counties. So I'm just adding to the discussion, and I'm not making any recommendation at this time, but this is, I hope that this committee can actually, by the end of session, produce something that can be bipartisan and actually does address some of these concerns and point us in the right direction.
Representative Fisher?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hurtas, thank you for those comments. And my dealings with the Met Council over the last few years is because I've heard the question about mission creep, et cetera, and one of the things that hopefully to give you encouragement is I think they realize that, and I've noticed that on some issues that they're very hesitant to get involved with because of the fear that it could turn into mission creep. And the issue I'll use is water supply, mm-hmm. is that one of the things that we've noticed over time is that Met Council has got some great scientists, great engineers, have got really great technical expertise, and they're able to provide input and advice and have done facilitation that many communities aren't able to do. And the example I'll use is up in our end of town where we've got water supply issues. Take a look at what's going to happen. And what they've been doing is they've been acting as a technical advisor to up there, is providing technical expertise that the communities don't have, so that as they're trying to make decisions what they're going to do for eventual other ways for water supply, is to be able to bring it in. They have no interest in wanting to run utilities. Mm-hmm. They've made it very clear. But they also want to make sure we're here to facilitate. Representative Runback and myself ran a bill up 2 years ago that allowed them to do this kind of work. And I know they've done this kind of work helping facilitate ways that smaller parts of the regions can come together, providing the technical expertise and allowing the regions themselves, the individual municipalities, to figure out what the best solutions are, and providing things that some people might say, well, this could lead to mission creep. I would say that the Met Council realizes very much where these a number of these bumpers are, but also want to help facilitate and bring together communities to so that they can figure out what their best solutions is using the great expertise and knowledge that is already built into the Met Council. So yeah, I see that as being some of the benefits.
I would just reinforce what Representative Fisher is saying. As an 8-year council member, I would say that staff in particular is extremely gun-shy about the council taking on anything that is not specifically authorized by statute. And Mr. Shetland in his presentation was very clear about that as well. The council does not take on anything that it is not authorized to do by statute. And I see Patty Nauman from Metro Cities is here. I think you wanted to get your two bits worth in as well, and I think it would be worth hearing from the Metro Cities perspective before we act on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have a handout also if there is a page who could just briefly on Metro Cities positions.
And then once we get there, we're running out of time here, but I think we're going to, Chair Mason, we'll need some direction for you on how you think we ought to proceed here once Ms. Nauman has been able to make her points here.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, also the AMM, or Association of Metropolitan Municipalities is our formal name. I appreciate the good discussion you're having here today on both bills, and I do want to provide some comments. I know that there are similarities in the bills. Metro Cities has actually worked to initiate the language in House File 370 that's being authored by Representative Fisher. But generally speaking, what I would say is that the organization, so I will speak to some of the specifics in that bill and why we support the language in that bill. The key tenets of both bills, which are 4-year staggered terms for Metropolitan Council members and modifications to the nominating committee process, I think are both are supported by Metro Cities. In with staggered terms, you are providing for trying to help alleviate what I would say sort of sharp shifts in direction on a council, as well as trying to alleviate mission creep and trying to alleviate having it be totally directed by staff. I think the view by Metro Cities is that you get that with staggered terms because you allow for more continuity of membership on the Metropolitan Council over between gubernatorial administrations. In addition, the modifications to the nominating committee process are items that are supported by Metro Cities as what we would call sort of good government, more robust, adding more rigor to that process. We think those two actually reforms do go together. Generally, what I would say in supporting both of those items is that Metro Cities does support increasing the transparency and the accountability for the selection process for the naming of the Metropolitan Council members. House File 370 does modify the nominating committee process by expanding the makeup of the nominating committee to 13 members, as does Representative Mason's bill, and providing for 4 city officials and 3 county officials on a nominating committee. That is supported by Metro Cities. And the reason that we do support having the makeup of local officials on a nominating committee be a little bit more weighted on the city side is first of all, you have a lot more cities in the metropolitan area, and as has been pointed out here earlier today, there is a lot of nexus between city governments and the Metropolitan Council. Cities are responsible for implementing a lot of what comes out of the regional government, and so we believe it is appropriate that cities would have a little bit more weight on a nominating committee. Metro Cities does support the 21-day comment period. We've actually had 14 days in our policies previously, and they were recently amended to support a little bit longer comment period. But I think some kind of comment period is advisable. Currently, there is no comment period required under law.
And do you feel strongly between 14 and 21 days?
I think we could live
with 14.
Well, we've had 14. We expanded it to 21. Mm-hmm. Certainly, be willing to be part of that discussion going forward, Mr. Chair. Metro Cities also does support a provision requiring a governor to explain to a nominating committee his or her rejection of any finalists for appointment to the Metropolitan Council. And the reason for that, we believe, is it also does provide more rigor, more justification for the work of the nominating committee, and and tries to mitigate against some of the criticisms that have been levied against the current nominating process and appointment by the governor, where the nominating committee makes recommendations. The governor certainly does not have to take those recommendations, but there's seemingly little process in between when the nominating committee does recommend and then the governor appoints. These provisions would add just a little bit more accountability on the part of a governor in the naming of those appointments. Further, in House File 370, Metro Cities to Support, having more detailed, specific qualifications for members, and I know there's been conversation here today about having members appointed to the council who are accountable to their district, who are engaged with their district. And we believe that the language in House File 370 does try to get at that a little bit, in a little bit more depth. So thank you. I know you're running out of time. Could talk a lot more, but I'll leave it here, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
But basically, Metro City prefers 370 over 192?
We think that the provisions in House File 370 do, and I know I talked to Representative Mason yesterday about this, but they do just maybe take the nominating process a little bit further, in our opinion. They're very similar, but just a little bit further. Okay.
Representative Kosnick, then we need to wrap things up here.
Absolutely, and that's where I'm going, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I would make the motion that we table this discussion, continue it for the next meeting, to continue to figure out, you know, we've got appointments here. So I would make the motion to table these two bills.
Continue this for 2 weeks?
Till the next meeting? Yes.
Madam Chair,
I would suggest we should be laying this over if we want to take it up again at the next meeting.
Yeah, so we'll, the
so
motion
I would
be
comfortable
this,
with that.
Lay it over until our next meeting in 2 weeks.
And thank you for the discussion.
Yeah, very good discussion.
Right, I would agree. Thank you.
Agree. Okay. Any more the discussion? And then when we come back, did you want to testify? Okay. All right, so the motion on the floor is to continue the discussion for 2 weeks till our next meeting. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Good discussion.
Maybe we should meet next week since this is an important issue.
Elections is in here.
Is it those big candles? I think
a good discussion next week is.
Oh, adjourned. Meeting's adjourned.
Yeah.